You're listening to Clouser on Business. Thanks for coming back. I'm Clouser, your host. Glad you're with us today. Hope life's treating you well. We appreciate you listening to the podcast, and thanks for sticking with us. Today we're going to discuss strategic planning, and since everyone in today's world counts calories, our version of it's going to be on the light side of the diet variety. So stay with us. We have back with us today Frank Dane of B2B CFO, and Frank promises to keep this on the low-cal perspective. Hey, well, welcome back, Frank.
Well, thank you, Clouser. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you may recall Frank was with us on an earlier podcast discussing business transitions. Frank's in the business of helping business owners and management with a variety of matters they face on an ongoing basis. Well, Frank, give our listeners a reminder of your background, because you've been in corporate America and you're on the academia level and consulting level. So why don't you give us a little reminder of where you've been.
Sure. Very quickly, I was a CPA for 10 years. I practiced with Price Waterhouse. I was a chief financial and chief legal officer for a public company for 20 years. And during that time and now, I was had a consulting practice. And now I'm a full-time consulting, helping companies increase their profits and cash from operations, developing strategic plans, and helping companies increase the value of the company so when the owner is ready to exit, we can go out to the market with a high valuation.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, thanks for that. Hey, well, Frank, what's the word today in regards to strategic planning?
Well, we're going to look at strategic planning from a very high level. Anyone who wants to discuss more of this in detail, I'd be happy to talk to them. Please just give me a call. I love talking about all this subject. So strategic planning really encompasses two separate and distinct activities. The first one is strategic thinking. And on that, the subjects we focus on are the four P's, or what's called the four P's of marketing: product, place, price, and promotion. Now, some say that the four P's are out and the four E's are in. I say you need to consider them all. And the four E's are experience, which is end-to-end customer experience; every place, which is brings you to the internet; exchange; and evangelism. Discussing the P's and the E's any further is beyond the scope of our work today, but you can find plenty on the four P's. And for more on the four E's, read the article by Brian Featherhow entitled, you guessed it, The Four P's Are Out, The Four E's Are In.
Well, are you, Frank, are you finding in today's world that people are actually applying these activities to their planning process? You're at the academic level, so are these type of things being taught there at the university?
Well, that's two questions. Let me take them one at a time. In practice, the answer is more not than yes, but the real significant point about that is the most successful companies are the ones that are doing it. And from an academic level, there's a lot being taught about strategic planning, but mostly what I'm seeing is it's the more of the old-fashioned, very cumbersome 80, 90-page document that you need a cast of MBAs and employees to work for it through you. The way we approach it is it's designed for smaller companies and larger companies, and that's so it makes it available to everyone. You don't need that cast of characters that you get in a big corporation.
Mm-hmm. Hey, so do you find that most companies have a plan, whether a business is the business within a business plan or a strategic plan?
Most of the companies I run into, the plans are in the owner's heads, and that can be very dangerous because it's easy to shift when you have something in your head and it's not written down. You lose focus. So one of the most important things about the strategic plan is to get something down in writing. And I think people delay because they want to get it perfect. But my recommendation is don't worry about getting it perfect. A half-baked plan is better than no plan at all, because at least you've got some direction, and the plan should be a living document so you can work on it as you're going along.
Yeah, what was that thing that your old friend Zig Ziglar used to say?
Oh, yeah. Well, Zig, I love this one. He used to say, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time.
And I think that goes on top of the old adage, people don't plan to fail, they fail to plan.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what do you see out there when you're working with your clients? On the planning process.
As I mentioned, the planning process really is mostly in the owner's head. They'll plan very short term. What am I going to do today? What am I going to do tomorrow? And it's almost always focused on increasing sales, and that's a key. But the bigger key is increasing your gross profit. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, owners without a plan to control the growth, they'll go wild. They'll bring in all these sales, not realizing, well, the sales bring in expenses. And what's that doing to your gross profit? Are you going to be able to cover your other expenses? Mm-hmm. So the plan is very important, because without it, even if you're growing, if your growth is uncontrolled, you're heading down the wrong path.
Mm-hmm. So when you're working with your clients and maybe even teaching this, what are some of the concepts that are in the strategic planning model?
Well, let me approach it like this. We can distill the concepts down to 8 interrelated concepts. This is overall very broad. And allow me to name them, and then we can briefly discuss each one. First, we have core values, and that really is just the should and the should nots of behavior. Then we have the why, the where, the what, the how, when, who, and finally, rewards and recognition.
By the way, Frank, that'd be a reason I wouldn't really want to get too deep into it on a practical basis. That's a lot of
it's a lot of concepts. Yeah,
that's cool. Reminds me of a little baseball joke.
But we'll get through them on the light version, as you said.
Okay, well, go ahead. Okay. The first one was core values.
Core values. So it's really, you can think of that almost as the equivalent of the 10 commandments, only you won't necessarily want 10. In fact, you probably want fewer.
Mm-hmm. Well, is fewer better?
Fewer, yes, because These are very broad rules that you're setting out, and if you get too many, it can get confusing. Mm-hmm. to people. So you want to have some very broad rules that everyone will stay within. Let me give you an example. So what what the core values do, they delineate the inner and outer parameters of behavior. In the broadest sense, they provide a framework, if you will, for a framework for behavior. And that is what you and your employees should and should not do. Perhaps if I use myself as an example, that would help.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm a service organization, and my primary should is always deliver value to my clients equal to or in excess of my fees. Let me give you an example. Say I agreed with a client for a fee of $10,000 to do a piece of work. Based on my rate, my hours, and all that, he or she authorized me to go ahead and do it. In the midst of the project, I determine that there's a piece that I can farm out to someone at a lower rate. And I do that, and because of that, I bring the project in at $9,000 instead of $10,000. Well, when I deliver that project, I only bill for $9,000. And now I've provided value in excess, at least from the perception of the owner, from what they expected. Mm-hmm. They expected to pay 10, they got 9, and they got what they wanted. Mm-hmm. So I met my broad value, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing, too, that brings out in people is character, because I wonder how often that even though you found a better way to do it less expensive, that you would have passed the savings on to your client.
Yes, you're right. Many people will not, and they call that value billing. Mm-hmm. They say, you know, get as much as I can for it is what they call the value.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think in the long run, by being honest and fair, I think you do better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all comes back to you.
Yeah.
It all comes back to you.
Yeah. So that was an example of what you should do.
Right.
What shouldn't I do?
Well, I have a very simple shouldn't. To me, if I don't want to see it printed on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, then I'm pretty sure it's something I shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps it very simple, very broad. And perhaps with those two examples, you can see why you don't need a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
You just need a few.
Yeah,
to keep you in line.
Yeah. Okay, and your second one was the why.
The why. Well, there's numerous studies that postulate money is not necessarily the prime motivator for many people. I mean, people will do things for love that they won't do for money. So the why of your business should not simply be to make a lot of money.
Yeah, but isn't money the driving force of why we're in business, to make a return for stakeholders, make a profit? How do you separate those two?
Well, money is really, yes, you're in business to make a profit. Okay, you want to make the profit.
Thank you, Frank.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's the main motivator of the people that are trying to make the profit. They're trying to make the profit not to satisfy their shareholders. They're trying to make the profit because it's going to be a success for them. The money is the means to acquire the things they need to acquire to support their family, to help society. Many entrepreneurs that I talk about, they're not in it for the money. They're in it because, boy, I have this great idea, and boy, is this going to help society.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not all about money.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Let's see. And let me use myself as an example for the why.
Okay,
if that's okay.
Yeah.
So my why is that private, small, and medium-sized business owners are important to our country and our citizens. They provide jobs, services, and products. So my why is everything I do is to help business owners succeed. I remove barriers that get in the way of their success. And so, yes, I want to make money. I do charge for my service. But I'm motivated to do it because I want to help.
Do you think that all these, especially entrepreneurs, understand sometimes they get in the way of their own selves as a barrier to the success?
Well, some do, and that's a really good point because you come in as an entrepreneur and you're doing everything and you've got a real tight control on it. And oftentimes entrepreneurs want to have that control.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to a point where they can no longer do all that, and they're either afraid to give it up or they don't think anyone else can do it. And that is definitely a stumbling block. Companies will fail because of that, because the owner, the entrepreneur, the leading star that started the business does not bring in the people that he or she needs mm-hmm. to make the business grow. You mm-hmm. reach a point where you need more people. You have to expand.
Yeah. You know, and the thing I found in with the people I've worked with and just learning this from management in general, but entrepreneurs, they can get a business to a particular level, and then they're like at that sound, breaking the sound barrier level, and they don't have the right juice or the jet or whatever to get them through that envelope, and then the things that worked when they were just getting started, they don't work any longer. So you see that?
That's exactly right. And I think you can boil it down to systems and processes. When they're first starting out, everybody's excited. They're working with a few people. But they reach that point when you get to X number of people, you can no longer control and supervise all that. You have to establish processes. You have to establish procedures. And many entrepreneurs aren't good at that because they're so creative.
Mm-hmm.
They almost resent having to follow a process or a procedure. They say, just let me be.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, when you're coaching your clients, we're off the topic just
yeah,
a little bit
okay.
here, but when you're coaching your clients mm-hmm. in this matter of, hey, you got to start doing something different. You got to be bigger. You've got to get some good people around you. How do you tell them if they don't do that, they're like going down the bathtub drain, so to speak?
Well, pretty much just like that, with using different words. But mm-hmm. you know, I explain as well as I can that you've reached this point, and if you want to get over this hump, if you want to scale up, you have to do this, this, and this, because you can no longer bring in all the big accounts.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 25 people now. You can't manage all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them will get it and some of them won't.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to, you know, do the best you can to convince them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, for a second, back to your why and your list of components here. Is this the area that a mission statement would fit in somewhere? Or, I mean, where does that come in?
Well, the mission statement is kind of like the value, statement. But what you have to do is really look at the purpose. What's the purpose part of the why? That gets to your mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it's to help. My purpose is to help owners of small and medium businesses succeed. So how do I convert that into a measurable statement? Because mm-hmm. The trouble with a lot of mission statements is they're very broad, they're very generic, such as, let me be the best, we'll be the best at this. Okay, well, that doesn't tell you anything. You don't know if you're being the best.
Right, it's not measurable.
So it's not measurable. It has to be measurable. So, for example, I would say for my business, again, using myself, I would say within 10 years, I want to help X number of clients improve their profits by X% each year. Now, I've essentially defined what I mean by success.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just help them improve profit. It's help them by X amount. So I can measure whether or not I'm succeeding, and I say percent each year. Mm-hmm. So I have a measure of my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And once I state that, then I start peeling away the layers of the onion, if you will, to achieve my 10-year, what they call a BHAG, which is a big, hairy, audacious goal. And I define what I have to achieve in those 5 years. And then I keep peeling away to achieve my 5-year goal. What do I have to do in the next year? To achieve my each successive year's goal, what do I have to do each quarter, each month, weekly, and then ultimately down to the day?
Yeah.
What do you have to achieve each day? And it's really a march of time. And as if you start, as Stephen Covey recommended or preached, start with the end in mind, you have to start with that purpose, that goal. How do you measure it? So we define broad parameters of acceptable behavior in which we can engage and pursue our why.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, do you find the right people are writing the mission statements and the vision statements within companies?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. And
I mean, is the marketing department writing them for
the answer to that is sometimes. Sometimes it's the right person. Quite often, it's just the owner had an idea. This was his mission when he or she started,
mm-hmm.
And they stick to that. But really, the best way to do it is to have everyone, really at the executive management level, should be participating in forming that statement. But it should go down. You should also get input from everyone involved in the company, because remember, you're trying to form a team that's going to pull together, and they're pulling together for that mission or that purpose. And people are much more likely to engage in the pursuit of that mission enthusiastically if they had a say in forming it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in your opinion, so you've got this, you got the why, which I think I've heard you say before, that's kind of like your guiding star of Bethlehem, mm-hmm. so to speak. So how changeable are these plans?
Oh, your strategic plan should be a living document. Even your values really shouldn't change that much, because values are broad. I mean, think of your personal life. You have certain values you live by. Maybe as you get older, some of them change.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you've had these values for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of stick with you, and they define who you are. Well, it's kind of the same for a business. It defines who or what the business is, but the way you're going to get there strategically, that has to be a living document, because that will change. That will change with the economy. It'll change with the people that come and go. Change with technology. So it has to be a living document.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a living document.
Okay. So you had your why, and so what was the next one? Where?
The next one is the where, yeah. And the where question asks, where do you want to be in the next 3 to 5 years in reference to certain aspects of your business? Notice how we're shaving down the time frame. The where is often referred to as the sandbox, and the sandbox should encompass items such as customers, geography, product, service mix, etc. So notice you're defining, you're putting out in front of yourself the where you're going to focus your business. Who are your customers? What geography are you going to use? What are your products going to be? And so at this stage, you also define measurable brand promises to your customers. And, well, for example, there's a company called BuildDirect. They did very well, and their mantra was, we'll have the best price, the best customer service, and product expertise. And they put that together as a package. And notice the product expertise is not a tangible thing that you can touch, but that was part of what they were selling.
Mm-hmm.
And you must also outline how you're going to keep these promises. And there's a number of major capabilities that you have to define, and you'll need to do that for things such as technology and expertise, and you have to connect those to what you're trying to accomplish and to how you've defined what you're going to deliver. Then what are your key initiatives or thrusts to pursue what you said you were going to deliver and how you're going to deliver it?
Yeah. So on a practical matter, when you're inside these clients, are they really doing this, or are they just giving lip service to it, or are they thinking they're doing it and they're not really?
The ones I work with, they're doing it because that's part of the reason.
Because Frank makes them do it.
Right. Well, that's part of the reason they engaged me. And I can say to them, you know, do you want to waste your time and money, or do you want to do what, you know, do you want to do what the plan is? But it really does require, it requires routine. And it has to be something that you look at almost weekly. Sit down with most of my clients I'll have that are going through this process. I will meet them every week. It might only be for an hour, mm-hmm. but it keeps it up front for them. And they know, oh, I have to meet with Frank. I better take a look at this and see what we're supposed to do, what we're working on.
Yeah, so for those who maybe don't have the discipline through Frank, because he does have it in your coaching abilities, yeah. you're able to sit down and get him through the process then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, so another question. In today's world, how far out is too far to look? I mean, the world's getting close. We're in really some volatile economic times. I mean, is even 3 to 5 years safe anymore?
Well, of course, the farther out you go, the less reliability you have. But remember, we're planning here, and some entrepreneurs or some experts, talking heads, whatever you want to call them, would say you should be looking out 25 years. And of course, you know, the farther out you are, the less reliable. But you have to pull that back. And I think 3 to 5 years is a reasonable outlook, because you want to things will change, yes. But remember, your values, your purpose. And as we said, it's a living document. So within that 3 to 5 years, things may be changing, but we still need to look forward. It's like when you're driving a car, you don't look down in front of you. You look out in front. You want that view to the future.
Yeah. That reminds me of texting. Sorry about that, Frank. Okay. So you have what is next on your list there.
We're on the what. Okay. So the what question takes us into the 1 year time frame. It asks, what results need to be achieved in the next 12 months? And again, it's expressed in terms of measurable priorities or hurdles that must be overcome. And for example, improve gross profit by 10%. That's measurable. Mm-hmm. And of course, you put a time frame on that as well. Reduce defective output from the manufacturing process to 1% or less. That's measurable. Again, within a time frame. Mm-hmm. You always want a time frame. So the aspect being measured is often called a KPI or a key performance indicator. Let's say I'm trying to improve the overall effectiveness of my sales team. A relevant KPI might be sales dollars per salesperson. So within the strategic plan, we're not only laying out the strategy, the tactics to achieve it, but we're laying out the goals and we're laying out those metrics that are going to tell us whether or not we're achieving what we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. It always has to tie back to something that's measurable. Otherwise, you really don't know.
Yeah. So taking that into practicality, your next step is
we go to the how now. Yeah. So we've talked about the broad values. We've talked about the where we're going to do it, the why we're going to do it. Now, how are we going to do it? Well, that takes us down to the 90-day or quarterly outlook. Notice how we're scaling down the time. We started 3 to 5 years. We went back to a year, down to a quarter, and now we're in the quarter right now.
Yeah, if I can interject something here. Yeah, some of the people that I've done business with and work for, you know, it's tough to get them to do a year forecast. So I found it's easy just to, hey, let's do a 13-week or a quarter forecast or whatever. Seems like it's easier for people.
Well, it is. And of course, there's more reliability. And if you're in a tight cash flow situation, you need to be projecting not only the quarter, but the month, the week, and maybe even the day, depending on how stressed you are.
Yeah. And quite frankly, as an owner or management person, if you can't look out 13 weeks, how are you going to look out 3 to 5
right.
years?
So. Yeah. That's the base. So we're going to take this 90-day or quarterly outlook. And we're asking ourselves, how are we going to move closer to the achievement of our one-year goals within this 90-day period? What is the next step in this 90-day period? For example, let's say I want to increase gross profit. You can approach that from two angles. You can increase sales dollars, which volume or price increases without a direct or equivalent increase in the cost of goods sold. Or you can decrease cost of goods sold. You could require your purchasing agent to obtain multiple bids for raw materials. You can employ new technology. You can take advantage of discount terms offered by suppliers for quicker payment. So we're defining there. Those are some of the hows, how you might reduce your costs.
Sure. Okay. Okay, and then who within the organization is going to be responsible for?
So the who factor spells out specifically as your to your question, who's responsible for each aspect of the plan that's driving the priorities and achieving the goals? And for accountability's sake, it must be one individual. There may be more than one individual involved in moving it forward and in achieving that specific goal or that metric, but one person has to be responsible for it. And not a department, not a team, one individual has to be accountable for the goal and the priority. If accountability is not assigned, you might get the results that are commonly described in a short story that I'd like to relay.
Yeah.
We'll see how it comes out just over the without reading it, but just over the voice. So the name of the story is Whose Job Is It Anyway? This is a story about four people named Everybody, Somebody, Anybody, and Nobody. There was an important job to be done, and everybody was asked to do it. Everybody was sure somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about that because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought anybody could do it, but nobody realized that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have done. You must specify accountability.
There must be someone in
yes.
charge of the project.
Somebody has to be responsible, yes.
getting out of time here, but any quick tips to help owners and managers on this assignment accountability part of it?
Well, again, the key is that it's one person, and it should be someone that has some expertise, some vested interest in that part of the achievement of the goal. So if you've got a sales goal, of course, you're going to have your sales manager, whoever's the head person in your sales department, be in charge of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the marketing department, you've got a marketing person in charge of those goals. So it's a team, but quite often with the smaller companies, the same person might be sales, marketing, admin, and all of those
mm-hmm.
things, but still get it down to one person.
Yeah.
No matter how many departments they're heading, it has to be one person.
Yeah, and then support them.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple more you had on your list there,
yeah.
I think. When?
Yeah, so the when. Now, recall, we're narrowing down our plan, starting with the BHAG, down to the 3 to 5 year time frame, down
that
to
was
1
big,
year.
That was the big,
hairy, audacious goal,
right, okay,
yes.
Yeah.
Get it down to monthly, weekly, and even daily goals and priorities. Each time frame has to have a date certain to target finishing. Without a date certain, delays can always be found. Reasons for delays can always be found.
Mm-hmm.
So date certains make us focus on priorities. And I think I mentioned that it should also be a routine where you're meeting every week so that everyone is accountable on a weekly basis. So you've got that routine and you've got the focus on priorities.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you handle the win.
Mm-hmm. And then your final point in that?
Yeah. Well, the final one is rewards and recognition. Remember, we started out by saying that money wasn't the big motivator. So each quarter and each year, you should have a number one priority, and there should be periodic rewards and recognition when the number one priorities can be checked off as accomplished. And again, money's not the big motivator. For example, many restaurants and hotels and service organizations will post the employee of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So recognition seems to be one of the biggest motivators for people.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be recognized. They want people to think highly of them, and even more so than money sometimes.
Yeah. Do you find it that most decision makers and management people, owners, whoever that's where they go first is to, well, I'll have to give them money or I'll have to pay them more or whatever. And why is it that behaviorally we jump to that conclusion?
You're exactly right. That is the conclusion they reach. And I think it's just tradition. People have always thought about tradition. If you think back, you know, a few years, we didn't recognize people. You worked, you did your work, you did it well, or you got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now it's a changing world with the new generations coming up. I remember when I was working for Pricewaterhouse, I mean, we'd work 60, 70 hours a week and not think anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the new generation doesn't want to do that. They're more about family and having a balanced life. So I think the money and the recognition fall into that.
Mm-hmm. Or working when they would like to work. Not that they don't get the job done,
right.
But having that flexibility
flexibility, sure.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, hey, well, Frank, we're out of time for today. Thanks again for coming on and sharing some great insights. I know you want to give some credit due to some people that you quoted here in today's
I'd like to do
podcast.
That. Great. So that's really a quick overview of the strategic planning process. There's many books that are very complex methodologies for strategic planning, as I mentioned in the beginning, but much of what I address today is derived from the teachings of Vern Harnish as presented in his book Scaling Up. And I like it because compared to many others, it's simple and it's straightforward. So I want to give credit to that book.
Yeah, that is a great book. I've read not all of it, but I've read most of it. And there's some great insights and pointers for business owner and owners and management people.
Yes.
Hey, well, thanks, Frank, for coming on again today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. You can find out more about Frank and us on our website at clouseronbusiness.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and at clouseronbusiness.com. Please write a review about our podcast on iTunes. We appreciate the feedback. Hey, well, thanks for listening. All for now. You've been listening to Clouser on Business.